we are in the middle of Yizmor Samach. Last week on Friday we did the Hagdama. We spent a lot of time on the Rashi, and now we'll go through it very quicker. Okay, so Lamatzeach, page 520, Lamatzeach, Al Shushan, Eidus Michtam LeDavid Lilamei. This is a very unusual, pasuk to begin with so many words to open up this. This in Mizmor, and we explain Lamatzeach for the conductor Al Shushan. Either Shushan means Derech Pshat, it's a musical instrument, or Al Shushan Eidus. We learned the Drush. The Drush is the Psak Halacha of the Bezdin. The Bezdin is called Shushan. The Bezdin is called it's Suga Bashoishanim. Eidus means testimony. Their testimony here refers to their Psak Halacha. Nichtam, we learned, either refers to, it means it's a gold, fine gold, which David over here said that this mizmor is precious. Or michtam, we have three perushim. Michtam means mochtam. David HaMelech was his makosoitam, he was noilad mohul. Or mochtam, he was humble in that he consulted with Shushan, suga bashoishanim, to ask them, the psak halach, what to do regarding Aram Naharayim, that Avraham, that Yaakov Avinu made a covenant with Lavan Harami, that he would not fight with him. And here, he now wants to go to battle with Aram Naharayim. L'David, L'lamei, L'min is to teach. There is a lesson here that Rashi actually did not really explain the significance of why it says here L'lamei. Maybe I missed what Rashi is saying. Okay, well, maybe look at a little some of the Omafarshim, but he leaves out really, why does it say over here to teach? There's a lesson here to be learned. You can say that about every single mizmor. We have to also remember that the famous Chazal tells that David HaMelech, he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it should be considered, when people recite Tehillim, it should be equivalent to learning Torah. We are very familiar, there are two different Mahalchim in serving Hashem. There is learning, and there is davening. When you learn, Hashem is speaking to you. When you daven, you are speaking to Hashem. Learning, davening. There's a cycle of learning and davening. David asked Hashem, we once learned this medrash inside, that when people engage in reading Tehillim, which you would assume that Tehillim is in the category of davening, people say Tehillim, it's part of the Nuscha Tefillah. In Pesuk of the Zimra, after davening is over, people, that Tehillim is a very big form of prayer. Yet David said, may it be in your eyes that when you recite Tehillim, it should not be considered only avoda, davening. It should be mamish, considered to be Talmud Torah. And what's interesting is we don't know what Hashem responded. Hashem didn't give a response. The all Mepharshim say this. Did Hashem accept David's request that yes, indeed, when a person reads Tehillim, it's equivalent in Hashem's eyes, whatever, you know, these are just words, what this means exactly, I have no idea. Hashem, okay, I accept. It should be considered to be Talmud Torah. Or Hashem says, okay, I hear what you want. Am I gonna grant your request? I'll think about it. So when it says here the word in this particular mizmor, Lilamei, David made this request regarding the entire Sefer Tehillim. And here when you come to a specific mizmor and you use the word Lilamei, you can't ignore that. It's reminding us of David's general request that Tehillim is a din of Limud HaTorah. You're actually learning a Daf Gemara when you learn a mizmor, or even when you recite a mizmor of Tehillim, it's equivalent to learning a Daf Gemara. And
could be another reason here, Lelamed.
Yeah.
Because it shows if Shushan is Sanhedrin, he wanted to know what's the halakha, what's the din,
yeah,
to do about these wars. As Lelamed,
very good. Okay, you're saying the Pasha of Shara, you're saying, okay, is that since this there was a, to teach for all other generations. Other generations, you can have situations where there are rules. When do you break the rules? And Lilamed, you're saying very, very good. Lilamed, over this, there's a halachic teaching. The whole mizmor, according to Rashi, is Shushan is Suga Bashoshanim, is Sanhedrin. Edus is their psak halacha, that you are permitted to go to war against Aram, because they are in violation. Every Shavua is a two-way street. That's a general rule. Every Shavua, by definition, when you make a Shavua, that you're not gonna harm someone, it's a given that it's a two-way street. I will not harm you, provided you do not harm me. You have violated your part of the deal, so I'm not obligated to keep my part of the deal. I want to go for a tournament.
That's the definition of a treaty. It's bilateral.
Bilateral, and it's more than just a shvua. Every time there's a shvua, there's always it's understood that it goes two ways. A bris could be that's the chilek between a bris and a shvua. A bris is a one way. It's obviously a bris, a covenant between two different parties, but even if one party is in violation, the other party is still obligated to keep his part. A shavua is no. The shavua is only binding when both parties keep their part. Once one party is in violation, the other party is already outside. A bris, Chazal said, we no longer have zuchus avos. But we have bris avos. What does that mean? Zuchus avos operates with the rules of a shavua. That if we do our part, Hashem will do his part. So unfortunately, we have not been faithful to doing our part. So Hashem has no obligation to be kind to us. Chazal said, tamu zuchus avos. But bris avos, that never comes to an end. Because what is a bris? A bris means, again, it's a treaty between two parties, but just because one party is in violation, the other party has to still keep his part of the deal. A bris, each side must keep their part of the deal, even if the other side is in violation. Okay, with that, let's take a look.
Declare a war, you need Sanhedrin. Even a king has to ask them a question. Am I allowed to do this?
Does a king need permission to go to war?
So, yeah.
To ask that, he's asking a general question. Over here from Rashi, the question was, he seemed like he would go to war, whatever. But since there was in the Torah, Yaakov made a bris, he made a shvua with Galeed, with Lavan, he needed to ask if he's allowed to basically violate or ignore this shvua. But you're saying, can you go to war in general? See, Lahavdil Elif Alfa Havdalis in America, is the President of the United States allowed to unilaterally declare war? Is that what it says? I don't know, it says in the Constitution, in Congress?
Yes.
You need what, a majority? A majority of Congress to give permission for the president to go to war, to declare war? Okay, and what about you just, you know, one day you wake up, oh, I want to go bomb, terrorists.
So what they do is they don't call it a war, they call it a police action
line of skirmish.
So in halacha, how does it work? I'm sure the Rambam talks about it. The Rambam certainly talks about what are the rules of a melech. The rules of a melech are very complicated. What exactly does a melech, when is he allowed on his own to go to war? When does the melech need the reshus of the Sanhedrin to go to war? And Hanani. Okay, okay. Let's go further. Let's go.
It's not the Yisachsev ben Ahem. He had two wars. One at Aram Naharaim and one at Aram. And he became weak. Then he stayed home, and then Yoav
became.
And they told him to stay home because
Shalaych Ben Israel. Right, we actually came across them in the beginning of the sefer. We had a mizmar that said exactly that. Now let's take a look over here at the mitzvah. We didn't look. We did the Rashi.
One second. We learned by the two things. We learned that by the shvuas that since they didn't keep their part,
right,
we don't keep our part, right?
Correct.
Okay, that's one.
That's what the Sanhedrin paskened. That was what we learned in Rashi. The Sanhedrin told David that they did not keep their part, therefore you have no obligation to keep your part. The galeid, the shvua that Yaakov made to Lavan is bottle. And there's no obligation to honor it because they have been in violation. And once they're in violation, it's cancelled. So you can do now whatever you want.
Is that different from what we were saying now? What you were saying now about the bris and the shvua?
So on the other hand, we have. I just tried to make an analogy. Is that Chazal say tamu zuchus avos in time of the last king, of the Malchei Yisrael. Chazal there say tamu zuchus avos, but bris avos loy tamu. So I just try to say a drush. I don't know if it's correct. Is that the rules of zuchus, to make an analogy between what is the difference between a bris and a shavua? There's a bris. We find sometimes a bris and a shvua. Yaakov Lavan. Did Yaakov make Lavan a bris? Does it say the word bris by Yaakov? I don't think so. I think it says that Vayishava a shvua. When Avraham dealt with Avimelech, it says he made a bris. He made a bris with Avimelech. Did Yaakov make a shvua with Lavan, or did Yaakov made Eid Hagala Zeve Eida Hamatseva? I'm not so sure it says the word bris. Maybe it does, but I don't think he made a bris. So the type of arrangement that Yaakov made with Lavan is different than the arrangement that Yaakov and Avraham made with the Pelishtim.
Avimelech.
And we find that's one of the reasons that when they came into Eretz Yisrael, Avraham made a bris that he's not going to conquer Eretz Yisrael. He's going to allow the Pelishtim to have it for a number of generations. And Hashem, according to one of the Midrashim, was very disappointed in Avraham. Why did you do that? I promise you the land. Who are you to go and make agreements with the Pelishtim that for four generations, li ulenini ulenechti, that Yinaki, who gave you permission to do that? And according to one of the interpretations, that's the reason why Hashem, the Akedah happened. You're telling me you don't want Eretz Yisrael? You want to give it away to the Pelishtim for four generations? Okay, so then you don't need to have children. You don't need to have a Yitzhak because I only gave you a child Yitzhak in order that he should be Yarsh in the land. You want to give away the land? Achar ha-devarim ha-ele v'alokim nisa es Avraham. What is achar ha-devarim ha-ele? There are many perushim, but one of the perushim in the Medrash is after Avraham made a covenant with Avimelech, which is immediately, the psukim immediately before the Akedah, as a sign of disappointment that Hashem had with Avraham for giving away the land for four generations, Hashem said, Avraham, you don't need your child then. You don't need to go be Yerusha. It's not yours. And also Rashi tells us in someone Chumash Devarim is that when Klal Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, Hashem had to arrange that Oig, I don't remember the whole calculation, another nation would come and conquer a certain portion of the land so that we can prematurely enter the land and it should not be called a violation of the covenant that Avraham made with the Pelishtim. So there was another nation that came and fought with the Pelishtim and wiped them out. So the Tzidonim, I forgot the whole, there's a whole complex sequence of psukim, they were the Rashi, and this was all was done because the covenant was still in effect. Now the question is, what covenant? They're in violation. Certainly, if Klal Yisrael is going to war against these people, certainly these people must have been done terrible things to Klal Yisrael. So why was there even a need to honor the bris of Avraham Avinu? If they went and attacked us, so I'm suggesting that's the chilek between a bris and a shavua. A bris, there are two parties, and they make an agreement between each other. If one of the two parties violates the agreement, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The other party has...
So I get you're making a distinction between a bilateral and a unilateral agreement. So I was thinking, is there ever a place where bris and shavua are in the same sentence?
Is there?
Yeah, we say it in the spheros.
Okay. Bris u'shvua. Okay, so there's a bris and a shvua. I'm trying to suggest that the word shvua is synonymous with zuchus aves. Okay, zuchus aves. And bris is, like we say, bris aves, the famous Chazal, tamu zuchus aves. Today, we no longer can expect to live in the merit of the zuchus of our ancestors. We're not deserving. and the merit of credit has run out. The bank has collapsed, and there was no government bailout. Okay, the zuchus avos, the Gemara says, is over. But not to worry, not to worry. There's something else. There is bris avos. Bris avos, that is never, does not never come to an end. What's the chiluk? So it would appear that what we're learning over here possibly is a chiluk. Is when you make a shavua, it is self-understood, I do my part and you do your part. If I violate my part, then you have no obligation to do, for you to do your part. But a biblical bris is we have an obligation to do our part. And Hashem has an obligation to do his part. And in the event that we are in violation, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Hashem still promised and guaranteed that he will do his part. He will never forget us. Now, obviously, it's not going to be the same, but that bris is what is our security that we will endure. Let's take a look over here at the Mitzudos David. On these first two psukim, going, we did Rashi last week, doing Mitzudos David. Now, Edus Michtam, according to the, it's on page 521. 521. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nehiya Bidvaray. Mayor bought, Mayor gave me as a gift this cup. This cup is very strange. What an insult. Someone gives you a present, you insult them. Because it's not straight.
How we to understand
the
first bracha?
Is that bris
or a
bris? You made it by hand. V'zoicher What do we say bris in the first bracha? Elokeinu Elokei Avram Elokei Yitzchak Elokei Yaakov Elokei Hagadol Hagibah V'Hanayru Hakel Elyon Gomel Chasadim Tovim V'Kunei Hakol. There's no bris.
So what?
V'zoicher chastei avos.
So what?
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah. You're asking that we're recalling the chasodim chastei avos. So tamuz zuchus avos. Yeah, you're asking a good question. How come every single day in davening we say the words v'zoicher? So we're asking Hashem to remember the chastei avos, zuchus avos. But if Tamu, it's a Beferishu Gemara, in Hoshea ben Ela, Hoshea ben Ela was the last king of the Malchei Yisrael. And Chazal said that in his era, when the Malchei Yisrael went into Golis, when the Aseres Hashvatim went into Golis with Hoshea ben Ela, Tamu Zichus Avos. So how then can we in the Nusach HaTfilah make a request Zuchus of us. I don't have an answer. I would assume the answer goes along the following lines. That even though Tamuz Chus Avos, if that's only when we're not behaving. But when we do the Ritzoyin Hashem, then the Zuchus Avos is reinstated. And before Hoshea ben Ela, even if we were misbehaving, we still lived off the dividends of the Avos. No matter, even if Chayyush was a terrible aver, it doesn't matter. The Zuchus Avos was protexia. Still got us where we needed to go. After Hoshea ben Ela, just because we're Meyuchasim, it's not going to get us anything. It's not going to get us a free ticket on the bus. It's not going to get us a free ride. However, if we do behave, we do Ritzoinoi Shel Mokoyim, then the Zuchus Avos kicks in, and it's to our advantage. Bris Avos operates even when we are not doing the Ritzoyna Shel Mokom, but obviously it's not the same flavor of Ahava. It has to be along those lines. So every day when we invoke the Zuchus Avos, obviously, even though Chazal say Tamu Zuchus Avos, there is some residual Zuchus in addition to the Bris that we draw from and we live on. Okay, let's look over here at page 521 in the Mitzudas David. A couple of things that he says that's not in the Rashi. Eidos Michtam, Hamizmar Hazel Hayu Ohov Loi Ka'adi. Mitzudas learns not like Rashi. Rashi made no mention of this. Rashi was pure drush. Rashi didn't seem to say pshat, unless you want to say that the Jewish is pshat, which many will tell you that is correct. And he says what edus is an unusual grammatical form of the word adi. Edicha, Moshe said, Hashem said to Moshe, tell the Jewish people to remove. Rabbi Mayeski, what is the pasuk? The edicha me'olecha. Hoireid. Hoireid edicha me'olecha. Remove the jewelry. The jewelry me'olecha. Why are you wearing jewelry at this moment in time when you've done such a terrible avera? You don't wear jewelry when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was angry. Now, what was the jewelry? So al derech pshad, you can say whatever. They're wearing cufflinks, a nice tie, a nice designer pair of glasses, fancy clothing. Okay, or it means take off your tefillin. Edicha means don't wear your tefillin. You don't deserve to wear tefillin. You're in avelus. Or Chazal say that when Klal Yisrael said nase v'nishma, this is more Kabbalistic. Hashem gave them the spiritual crowns. They were crowns of one connected nase, one connected nishma, and Hashem said to Klal Yisrael, tell them to take off these crowns. So we mahalchim the farshim say means jewelry. They're wearing jewelry. They're wearing their Sunday best. You know what Sunday best means? No one's laughing. Sunday best means when goyim go to church on Sunday. It's called a Sunday best. So they worship the egel. They worship the egel. They were wearing their Sunday best. They did them avodah zarah. Take off your clothing, your beautiful clothing, or take off your tefillin, because we know they already were wearing tefillin at this point in time, or take off these spiritual crowns. Echad keneged nasav, echad keneged nishma. So that's the word hoser, hoireid, ed yicha, ayin dalid yud. In this pasuk, we have the word ayin dalid, vav saf. According to the Mitzvot Tavit, this is a complex form of ed yicha, of adi. Look in the Mitzvot Siyoin, edus inyan kishut va'adi, an adornment, a jewelry. V'chein v'es hanezer v'es ho'edus, a crown and edus. What's edus? In the context of a crown, obviously it means some type of, some form of jewelry. So here as well, al shushan edus lamatzech al shushan. This mizmar is for the conductor. Al shushan, al shushan. Mitzutas David is not telling us what shushan means. It doesn't. I'm sorry. The Mitzutas Sioni says it is a musical instrument. Edus nichtam.
The name of the city, the capital of Persia.
Yes, that's what the Chumash Anoch says. Chumash Anoch. We learn in Rashi. We spend the whole Friday learning in Rashi. The word Edus, Shushan, according to Rashi, refers to the Sanhedrin who sat in the Lishka Sagozis and is described in Shir Hashirim as Huga Bashoishanim. It is fenced in by roses. So it's a code word for the Sanhedrin. According to Mitzudos, it's the name of a musical instrument. According to the Chaimus Anach, the Chidah, it's a Jewish, it refers to Shushan Habira. And this entire Mizmar is another Mizmar in the list of Mizmarim that are referring to the Purim story. But according to Mitzudos over here, we're referring to Mitzudos David, it's the word is really Adi. Adi is a piece of jewelry, and the saf at the end of the word connotes a smichus, and I guess it means edus michtam. It is a gold piece of jewelry. There are all different types of jewelry. There's custom jewelry, okay. There's make believe jewelry. All there's cheap jewelry. This piece of jewelry is made from gold. Gold. Edus michtam. It is jewelry that is made from the finest gold. It is interesting that according to the Mitzudas David, he does not say this idea in the other Mizmorim, where it also says the word michtam. There it just says that it's gold. What's gold? You have a bar of gold, Fort Knox. You have a bar of gold. A bar of gold, but over here, it's not just gold. It is jewel. It is gold that has been fashioned into an ornament. Okay, Ludavilam, back to the Mitzudas David. Mizmar Zeho Yo'ovlo Ka'adi, it is beloved to David like an ornament, Michtampas made from the finest gold. Next, lilamed. What does that mean? Mitzvah Savit asui lilamed das esa'am eich hakol bo behashgacha. So, Rav Kalman said, ladas over here, according to Rashi, it meant, ladas means, ladas, Eliezer, we said, we learned lezecha neshmasa, Eliezer, we learned lezecha neshmasa, your father on fire. So according to the Mitzudos, according to Rashi, as Rav Kalman said, it refers to the psak of Bezdin. Bezdin issued a halachic decision that it is permitted to fight with these two nations, with Aram specifically. According to Mitzudos, it refers to that this mizmor, if you study it very well, you will uncover the secrets of Hashkocha Pratis that exist in this world. There's what to learn and say from this mizmor. Okay, next, then the Pasuk Beis. What is the Pasuk Beis? Bahat Soysoy. Bahat Soysoy means to incite. David was very clever, and he learned how to have his enemies fight one another. That's a very, very good tactic. When you're in a lot of trouble, you go and you bring on trouble. Instead of fighting directly with your enemies, you somehow create a situation where your enemies will fight amongst themselves and not have the time and the presence of mind to fight with you, and you can therefore escape, you can sneak out. Kishanilcham im Aram. Okay, when he was fighting with Aram, what did he do? He went and he saw that he's not going to win Aram. So the best thing to go do is to go have Aram, Naharayim, fight with Aram Tzoiva. They'll kill each other. Leave me alone. Vayoshev Yoyav, Kishahoy David Nilcham im Aram, Yotza. And then what happened? So the Mitzvah of Levi, how did Edom enter into this pasuk? How to get here? So he explains. So Yotza Edom, when David was fighting with Aram, Yotza Edom, Lazor Laram, who came to join the battle? Coalition. The more things change, the more they stay the same. People are partners. Everyone likes to get involved in the fighting in the wrestling match. Okay, you don't see though in boxing. You ever watch a boxing match? No one ever comes to help the other guy. Did you ever see a boxing match? Someone's being beaten up. No one jumps into the ring to help out the victim, the one that's losing. Okay, but in war, it's not like that. The one that's losing is going to go get $100 billion of assistance. And the president of that country gets to buy with that money a $1.2 billion bank account in another country.
That was a book, the Mouse That Roared, right?
The Mouse That Roared?
Yeah, a little nothing.
A little island.
Said, let's declare war on the United States. And we'll get
a lot of money.
We'll lose.
Zelensky is one of the richest people in the world. You know that? Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, is one of the richest people in the world. Well, he gets a commission. No joke. No joke. You know how much he has? How much money he has? Go read the news. How much is worth?
Every fundraiser takes a
commission. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Okay. So it says over here, Aram Beshav Zekrizov Zekham Aram Yosef Lazarus, Aram Beshav Yov El Maracha, Lelecha Zekas Edom, and Yoyav, he ran to the Marach, he ran to the battlefield, Lelecha Zekras Edom, Leval Yavar Leschaber Im Aram, that they should not, so it's over here, the Mitzvah of Yigiz is much more insight, you have to study the story in more detail, what it says in Sefer Shmuel, and Divrei Hayamim, his mission was to prevent Aram, Edom, from joining the battle. David incited the two Arams against each other, and Edom wanted to join the battle, and Yoav's mission was to prevent Edom in entering into this battle. So he fought with Edom, and he went and he inflicted damage. Let's take a look. Now, before we go, let's look at the Mincha Shai. There's a very interesting S. There's an S over here in this pasuk. It only appears one in three times in Tanakh. Now, the word S in this week's parasha, Vayakel Pikudei, did your Baal Kriya, did he do every S and Ace correctly?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Yudi Woolman.
They stopped
him. What?
They stopped screaming.
Yeah, they stopped screaming?
Yeah.
Were I laying the Baal Kriya messed up on, I think, two of them. Not bad. Two out of how many?
Did you have to go back?
No, of course not. You don't go back. Of course, you don't go back. However, you know, once you lose the sequence, once you lose the rhythm, you know, you get off, if you get off on one of the one S or Ace,
you know, the truck, you're not going to make a mistake.
That's right.
Okay, people make mistakes. It's complicated.
That's why the shtiebel I laid in for a long time, the rabbi told me to go to say, just say ice.
Ice. If I'm not mistaken, in last week's parashas, Vayakel Pikudei, there are three sequences, there are three listings. There are three major listings of the Kalim and everything in the Mishkan, and each one of them has at least each one of those sequences has at least 10 S and Aces, so it's a grand total of at least 30, and there are sequences, and it's not the same. The sequence of how the Kalim are presented in each of the three places is different, and when it's different, it caused there to be a variation in S and Ace. So it's not so simple. Now, generally the rule is, every ace, tsere, is a word that stands on its own and has a trump, has its own melody. Every time in Tanakh, except for three places, when you have the word S does not have its own independent melody, ta'ame hamikra, and it's always connected with a makaf to the next word. Like, look in this pasuk over here, pasuk beis. It says, look on the third line on the page on the top. It says ve'es aram tseva vayoshav yoyav vayach es edoim b'melech. So it's there are two esim, and each one you notice is a line that connects the s to the next word, which means that the ta'amei hamikra of aram also goes on the word s. It's just one. It's one expression, and each expression has one melody, and they go together. There is no trop on the word S. There is no trop. So this is one of the three exceptions in Tanakh, where the word S gets its own trop and its own chashivus. It's a shocking thing. Possibly is Behatsoy Soy S. Look at the Mincha Shai. The Mincha Shai S, Pasuk Beis, is very, very, very unique, extremely unique. S ze nokud segol. Okay, which means it's not ace. It's S. S does not get a trop. S always has a makof that connects it to the next word. This is an exception. Vihu b'ma'arich. B'ma'arich means that you emphasize it. You don't just swallow it up. Whenever you have the word S and there's a makof, you say it as quickly as you possibly can, because it's really included. The melody of the word is in the next word, and the trump of the next word goes with it. So b'marach in here means no, pause, stop sign, say the word slowly, give it emphasis, give it its limelight. It's an independent word. Nu b'marach. Beloy makof, without a connecting line to the next word, sheloy kaminhog. This is not the way we do things. This is not the custom. This is not ordinary. V'chein bo shnayim achim kamozeh. There are only two other places in Tanakh where you have such an S. S geoin Yaakov asher ohev sela. Okay, that's also in Tehillim. And we say this in the Nusach HaTfilah on Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, we say this as S, Go'oin. You have to emphasize the word S. And S, Asher Yehav Hashem Yochich in Mishlei, also is the third time S is independent. Radakan, okay, the Radak refer, we'll see this in a second. Uvim Mesores, B'mizmor Memzayin, Uvim Mishlei Gimel, and if you look in the Mesores, one day we're going to learn the Mesores, how the code words for the Mesora Gedoyla and the Mesora Kitana. The Echtoiv Oid Mizeh Be'ioiv Soif Sim Mem Aleph. Okay, whatever, you can write more about this. What house with Evite? I do not know. But obviously, okay, there's something over here that has to be understood. There's something, it only appears three times in Tanakh. This over here has to be understood what exactly here is taking place. Look at the Targum. Okay, I don't know how to translate this over here. The Targum over here says, Kad when Kinash David, when David gathered, Mashiryon, a camp, it means a battalion, Va'avad al-Igar Sohadusa, and he passed over Yigar Sohadusa, the mound. He David over here gathered his camp, okay, his army, and he's referring over here to what we learned over here in Rashi. What Rashi discussed at great length is Yoyov.
So he passed by there.
Right, so it's more than he passed by. He passed over. He went over the red line. Lavan and Yaakov made a covenant that Yaakov would never ever cross over that line. And in fact, it would bring back memories. The one that I remember reading about, I think it's in if I'm not mistaken, in Alexander Hull, in his book, one of his books, have it on the shelf over here, probably in the back of the book, he has his chidushim in addition to in his analysis of ancient Egypt. Okay, he has his stuff is really amazing, amazing things. And even if you disagree with his conclusions, the insights that he provides are gold. The whole analysis, even if you disagree with what he comes out with, he opens up the sugya very, very wide. And in the back of his books, especially in the one about ancient Egypt, as an aside, he basically has all of these chidushim on Chumash, like on a Chumash Shemos. Because going through all this enormous research of trying to figure out, you know, who is the Pharaoh of ancient Egypt, he just happens to become aware of certain yediyos that totally are game changers in understanding Chumash. And if I'm not mistaken, over there he says in the back that when there was a famine in Eretz Yisrael, Yaakov Avinu, the famine did not affect Aram. This is what he says there. The famine was only in the south, where Canaan and Egypt and the entire southern portion of the civilized world of that time.
Well, Egypt controlled until Megiddo.
That's
where they were.
Okay, where's Megiddo? That's all the way.
Includes the southern part of Eretz Israel. Egypt owned part of what's today Eretz Israel.
The famine was in the south. And he claims, you know, if you read Chumash, you get the impression that there was a famine in the entire civilized world.
That's how we
learn the faith. Okay, that's right, exactly. That's the impression you get. There was the whole civilized world. There was a global depression, a global recession, depression, whatever term you want to use. He says it's not true. His research proves to him is that when there was a famine, it was only in the civilized world, whatever that means, whatever that includes at that time. The southern portion of the world was starving to death. But the northern part of the civilized world was doing well, had plenty of food, was doing fine.
Why didn't people live there?
So the question is, why didn't Yaakov Avinu go north to Aram? The northern part is basically Aram. Why didn't Yaakov Avinu go north to buy food there? Why did he go down? Why did he go down south? Why did he go? And in fact, he writes, it would have been much easier, it would have been much simpler. Egypt was not a place to go. Ervas Haaretz, it would have been much more to the benefit of Yaakov Avinu to go when there was a famine. They should get food from the north. And he writes there, I don't remember all the sources, because of this covenant, because there was a bris between Yaakov and Lavan, Eid Hagal Hazeh Ve'eda HaMatzeva. And this is in the lifetime of Yaakov. We're dealing with the same, it's not dealing over here 500 years later. Yaakov himself is the one who made this. Yaakov, not that many years ago.
Wasn't it happening to go to war? Go for food.
Yaakov made a deal with Lavan. We're done. I don't step on your territory. I have nothing to do with you. And that created for Yaakov a very difficult situation where he desperately needed food. And the simple thing to do is you go to your local grocery store. Okay, you go to your grocery store. No, I made a shavua. I got into a problem. I got a fight. I used to go buy in pomegranate. and I got into a fight there over 99 cents, and I made a shavua. I'm never stepping in the store. And now you have a problem, and the only store that has what you need is pomegranate. No, my pride, I can't. Yaakov Avinu could not go up north to Aram to buy food, and he says, Yeshever b'Mitzrayim. His children looked at him, are you joking? You're joking? You're going to send us to Mitzrayim to go buy some beans, some Goya beans? Yeah. We can go around the corner. Let's go around the corner over here to the local grocery store, to the Chinese grocery store around the corner. We can go buy some Goya beans. You're sending us to the North Pole to go buy.
Yeah, but what's wrong with that is it says B'chola Oretz Bol Mitzrayim Bol
Mitzrayim. The South.
So everybody did. It wasn't just Yaakov that went down to Mitzrayim.
I hear the question. I don't know the answer. I hear the question. But we have to see how he says it. He did his homework. I don't know. I'm not saying. I'm just recalling right now at this moment without preparation. As we're talking about this, it was bothering me weird, and now I finally remembered it. And he talks about this. He talks about this whole reality, and he must deal with what you're saying. I mean, he's a very big Talmud Chacham. Panovich is a Panovich. You know, he spent many years. He's still learning Panovich. He says. Whatever it is, and he deals whatever. I don't know the answer. We have it on the shelf over here.
I'll give you a decent answer, because the other places weren't blessed with extra like Mitzrayim was. Mitzrayim had 7 years of plenty, so there was tons of extra food.
Price was cheaper.
I want to sell it, but Aram had enough. They didn't have a famine. No, but they weren't going to go sell wholesale their own product, because then they would starve. They couldn't, but. As the Abarbanel says, why by the second year did they run out of food? How long were they had all the
because
7 years
they were
of plenty? Because the people in Mitzrayim, they
got hoarding.
So used to having some, they were
hoarding,
marketing their stuff. You don't have to go to Yosef. We're going to sell you our own stuff. We'll get a little bit extra. You don't have to go down
to Yosef. Chazal said life had rotted. They were hoarding. It's like when COVID came, people started stocking up on toilet paper. And all these other precious commodities.
The first thing they did.
Okay, so if this thesis is correct, and Yaakov Avinu at great Mesiras Nefesh did not go to Aram, did not step over the line, and instead went down to Mitzrayim, which resulted in a shibud of 210 years. Could you imagine if they would have gone up north? They never would have found themselves in Egypt. They wouldn't have been slaves. The whole story would have been different. I know it says Vavod and Vinu Yosam. Okay, but
the brothers had an agenda. They were thinking to look for Yosef, right?
Okay, no, but that's not what Yaakov told him. Yaakov says Shamati Yeshever b'Mitzrayim Redu Shama. So Redu Shama. You know, we just learned Cheder. Redu Shama means okay. That's the only game in town. The only place to buy food is in Egypt. But if you learn that he had a choice, it's a game changer. If this idea is true, I don't know it's true. I'm just telling you what it says in this book. I don't know it's true. But if it's true that he had choices, you don't have to go down to Mitzrayim. You can go around the corner to the local grocery store. No. I made an Eid HaGalazeh, the Eid HaMahamatzeva. I'm not looking for trouble. No, go down to Mitzrayim. What's the big deal? You go on a train, go down to Egypt, go buy stuff, come back. Eid HaGalazeh. If that's and he was Moiser Nefesh for this. If that's taka the case, then and this was in the conscience of Klal Yisrael all of these years. When David now decides we're going to cross that line, that's a big deal. Yaakov Avinu didn't cross the line for a lot more important things, and now you're crossing the line over what? Because you want to expand it. You want. I don't know. It doesn't even say what the war is all about. Wait, we're dealing with an existential threat. It doesn't seem to say they were threatened to such a degree. Maybe they were. But it's a big deal. Because Yaakov didn't do this. And now David's going to do it? And I mean, you read this Rashi. This Rashi, it's very interesting, this Rashi. Yoav comes to kill her. Excuse me. We have an arrangement. And Yoav takes it. In war, there are no rules. You go to war, don't go bother me with legalities. With contracts. You go do whatever you want to go do. There are no rules in war. All of a sudden, Yoav freezes. You're right. He goes to David. David, Yeah, you're right. We got a problem. David goes to the Sanhedrin. And the Sanhedrin has to sit and judge and give a psak halacha. Isn't this a little strange? What may kara masava or saif masava? Obviously, if you accept what Rabbi Alexander, who is a rabbi, Alexander Hull says, it creates a whole new dynamic. In the conscience of Klal Yisrael, you don't pass this line. Eid Hagal Hazev Eid HaMatzeva. The Targum now leaps off the page. It totally leaps off the page. The Targum says, Kadwen Kinash David Mashirion a battalion. Doesn't say this in the Pasuk. Where did the Targum get this from? Va'avar al igir sohadusa. Hoo-hoo! Yigar, that means Yigar sohadusa. That's the location where they made the gal. Doesn't say that in the Pasuk. It says, Behatsoy soy es aram narayim yes aram soy. Where does it say Yigar sohadusa? Yigar sohadusa mandikar shenei. Obviously, going to fight against Aram brings to the conscience, wait a minute, you can't do this. It's a pasuk in the Torah. Eid Hagal Hazeh. This is a big deal. Yaakov Avinu refused to do this, even though it would have been to his great advantage. It's a big game changer. It changes the whole perspective, the story of Yiridas, of Pesach. You know, think about it. You come now, Pesach, the Haggadah. Is there any allusion to this type of idea? I have to go back, look at the book very carefully and see what he says. In the story of the Haggadah, it's a total game changer. We found ourselves in Mitzrayim. So we forgot about history. First, I want to ask you, how did you get here? How did you get to Egypt? What? We didn't have what to eat. What? Didn't have what to eat? There's a grocery store around the corner from you. We didn't even have what to eat. No, we didn't have what to eat. What's wrong with the... No. We had a fight with them, so we can't go to that grocery store. Really? And you found yourself in Egypt? Integrity. Yeah. We made a promise, we had a covenant, under no condition, and we moiser nefesh, we went to the ends of the earth in order to be people of integrity, not to violate the Yigar Sadusa. Is that what it comes out? Is that what it comes out? Is the whole story of Yerida to Mitzrayim is all built on the foundation of keeping your word. We kept our word, we're not going to walk over there. And because of that, the whole world changed. That's a whole new story. A whole new story to Yetzias Mitzrayim. And to a small, teeny degree, that's what it's alluding to in this Targum, Al-Igar Sohadusa, Va'agiyach Imaram. And he fought, Agiach means like he gored. He fought with Aram, the Alpiros, which is on the Euphrates. I guess that's Naharayim. Remember, Chol, you think you mentioned that? Someone mentioned that? The two rivers. Okay, Aram, the Aram that is located by the river. The Targum, for whatever reason, only says one river. What happened to the Pras and what's the other? Chidekel? There's another river, so that's why we usually call it Naharayim. There are two rivers, not Nahar, Yud Mem. It's in between two rivers. The Targum, for whatever reason, doesn't mention the other river. The Im Aram, the Im Tsoiva, Omin Bosar came later. See, over here, he's coming over here to explain the difficulty. What is Edom doing in this passage? Afterwards, Tov Yoav, Yoav returned, Umicha. And he hit. Notice two different words for fighting. When it came to Edom, it says Micho. Micho means you give a zetz. You give a frask, you hit. But in the other one, the other passage, when it says Bahatsoisai, there he says the word Va'agiach. Agiach comes from the word of Ashor Hanagoch.
By the way, the word Mesopotamia means between the two rivers.
The two rivers. Naharayim. So how come the Targum over here left out one river? He dropped one of the rivers for some reason. In the plain of salt. What's that? Do we know what that is today? And they were smitten, the David, the Yoav, and it fell from the army of David, from the armies of David, the Yoav, Teresar Alfin, 12,000 people of Edom were killed by the army of Yoav and David. Now, by the way, everyone that on the page, I assume that if I go back to the Psukim, it's a Davar Pashut that when it says there were 12,000 casualties, it refers to the enemy, Edom. Is that really what it says in the Targum? Does it say in the Targum over here, "V'naflu min cheleihoin de David v'yav treisa alfin"? To me, you can also read it that, as can this be, that David suffered defeat. Not defeat totally, but he suffered casualties. That 18,000 people of David's army perished. Now, I never would imagine saying that, because all the Mepharshim, it's like Pashat. I gotta go back to Sefer Shmuel. The who died? Edom. They wiped out. They wiped them out. They wiped out 18,000 people from Edom. Is that really what it says? Vayoshev Yoav vayach es Edom begay melach. Now it says that's what it says, right? It says he yach shnei masa olaf, 12,000 people. He says 12,000. The Zalpa says 18, 6,000. Okay, we learned that on Friday, but the for some reason the Targum, he makes you, he puts in your mind, you know, he's playing with your mind. He starts saying words that start, wait a minute, what did you say? Then you go back to the pasuk. Did I read the pasuk correctly? He says, "Unefalu min cheleihoin de David." It fell from the army of David, the Yoav, Teresar Alfin. If I wouldn't know better, I would think the way he said those words, it means that David and Yoav lost from Klal Yisrael, 18,000 people died. But go read the pasuk. The pasuk does not seem to say that. But we've already have a lot of experience learning Tehillim. Is that many times in the pasuk, you know, you gotta embellish the pasuk with many, many words, what the pasuk really means. So again, that's Pashup Shad is beyond the shadow of a doubt. It means that David and Yoav, they killed from the enemy 12,000 people, and we have a contradiction. What? Right, so that's how we're going to read. We have to correct ourselves and take what it says in the pasuk. Read the pasuk simply and look at basically all of the mefarshim, and they all basically seem to indicate as a davar pashut that David and Yoav, their combined army wiped out from the enemy 12,000 people. But yet, if you look at the Targum alone in isolation, if you would just take this little passage and you would present it to the average person in isolation, out of context, I think many people will tell you that it means over here is that David's army suffered tragedy. They lost 12,000 soldiers. What? Go back to the pasuk. Go back to the context. No. That's not what it means. No, is it not? You know, it's interesting. Do we really care how many people die from the goyim? When we learn about Milchemes Goy Gumagog, in the Milchem of Ai, Klal Yisrael comes in Egypt, right? Sheish me'ois rechev bochur. Okay, 600 chosen chariots. We're talking about the weapons. How many people operated one chariot? I assume one, right? I assume it's not so poshut. How many horses were there? It's a whole big sugya, three. Shalishim al kuloi. Some say that each, there are different types of. In ancient times, there were different, we know there were different types of chariots. Some chariots had three horses pulling them, some had two, some had four. I vaguely remember learning, I think, in the Oitze Pilois, there's a whole analysis. What exactly did the chariot, one of these chariots of power, what exactly did it look like? And how many horses, how many people were parts? So I think he brings some obscure medrash. Underneath, no, that's been debunked long ago. That video of a chariot sound in there are different, the armor force, they were different civilizations. He's, if I vaguely remember, in the Oitze Plus, he cites a midrashim that each Rechev Bochor had three horses. There was a chariot where the warrior sat, and it was pulled by three horses in a unique arrangement, configuration. And then he talks about other wars where there were four, where there were two, there was one. Okay, these all, who even says there was only one warrior? Maybe in the chariot there was a whole team, like in a tank. Today in a modern Israeli tank, how many soldiers operate one tank? Go in the tank, it's a mayor. How many people are in a tank?
Several.
It depends, right? They reconfigure. And there are people there, and then there is the reconnaissance people out there, and you're talking for one tank. You probably have 50 people working on what people there in the tank itself, and there are people scouting out the territory and home base on the radio, satellite communications. Someone in Arizona is also sitting there and giving you guidance what to do. One tank today is supported by how many people? A lot. Modern day warfare. There are a lot of people that are supporting one tank, both inside the tank and outside the tank. What does it mean? 600 chosen chariots. Okay, what does that mean? How many horses per chariot? How many riders were there in each chariot? How many people were supporting the chariot by riding in the back, providing fuel? You know, today there's a tank. A tank is nothing unless there's a fuel tank trailing behind you. Do you know how much fuel a tank uses? Even the most efficient tank, I once saw a documentary on this. It is mind-boggling how much diesel a tank needs to go even 1 mile. It's just mind-boggling. And that's the biggest problem when they use these tanks in the battlefield is behind every tank, they have to have trucks of fuel to support the tanks that have to safely be able to follow behind them, and they shouldn't be blown up, the smithereens, because once you blow up the fuel tank, those tanks, they're not going to last very long. How much longer can they last to move around? So in ancient times, it wasn't much different. You need a support team for each of the horse needs to eat, and whatever. I don't know all the details, but certainly there has to be a whole support team. The Torah doesn't tell us this. It doesn't tell us how many people were killed when in the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim. It says, Sheish. It doesn't tell you numbers.
Right.
We have no idea. We have no idea how many people drowned in the Yam. We have no idea how many people that were following behind who were not riding one of the chosen Sheish Meos Recha Bochor. When Klal Yisrael went into Eretz Yisrael, they went to the battle of Yericho. Does it tell you how many people died? Nothing. When they went to the battle of Ai, does it tell you how many people died? Nothing. All the battles, does it tell you? It tells you nothing. 90% of the time, it doesn't tell you any. The only time it tells you numbers is when Klal Yisrael suffers. 36 people, the Pasuk says, in Ai, 36 people died in the Battle of Ai. And Chazal said, it wasn't 36, it was one person. Osnil ben Kenaz, there was Shokol Keneged, Rubus Shel Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin is 70 people, so 36 people, one person died. Okay, Midian, in the Milchemes Midian, does the Torah tell you how many people Klal Yisrael killed in Midian? It doesn't say one word. Does it tell you how many people? What? That was the first battle. But before the beginning, 24,000 people that said died because of what Midian did. They were Machshul, Klal Yisrael, and Arayas. So it tells you the casualties of the Jewish people. But when we launched a counterattack, so no one died in Klal Yisrael. But does it tell you how many people were killed? Nothing. Shechem. When Shimon and Levi wiped out Shechem, does it tell you how many people they killed?
Same for Yosher.
But the reason was probably is that we don't want to gloat on how much.
Who cares? It's not relevant. It's not relevant. So why is it relevant? Why is it relevant to know that 12,000 people of the Edom died?
That's why maybe Targum is correct.
Oh, but Targum, you can read Targum both ways. You can read Targum that at the hands, after you.
Min,
yeah.
The David, not Lid David, the David, of David.
You're going against the grain, you're going against the grain of every safer you'll find on the shelf.
But it's pulling in very nicely, just that we don't talk about.
Yeah. That's what this Targum is really playing with our minds here. And maybe, you play with someone's mind enough, maybe you're right. Maybe it's Haki, you're right. Maybe when it says here in the Pasuk, Vayoshav Yoh Vayaches Edom Begay Melach, Kama, Shneim Oso Olaf, at great expense. Because we know that in Tehillim especially, you don't read words. This is not the New York Times. It's a puzzle. This is a puzzle. Every expression over here has to be taken out of context and fully understood what it's really trying to say. Targum over here is saying something which is he playing with us. I don't know what to make out of it. And indeed, if you take a look at study Tanakh, the Torah is not giving you numbers for the Goyim. Torah counts us again and again, Bamidbar, not the last week's parasha, twice, count with the Shkolim, 603, 550. Torah counts us again and again and again and again, and every time there's a problem, we can't. Goyim, who cares? Who cares how many Goyim there are? Who cares the casualties? 500. You're saying good? He's saying very good? He's saying Akasha on me. In the Megillah it says they killed in Shushan Abira Chamesh Meyos Ish. Chamesh, so Taka does say they killed 5. The Aseres Bnei Haman. It does count. Is the Megillah an exception?
But that's not a real Malik.
That's a Malik.
That's not a Malik. That was only the commanders. That doesn't show you how many people were
really killed.
Only the commanders.
So this is definitely something you go challenge. Challenge the people in the Chidun HaTanach. Okay, the people say the Chidun HaTanach in Eretz Yisrael. Get a hold of some of them and say to them, okay, you know Tanach. You're on television. You know Tanach in your sleep. You know the Muhammad, David, in Shmuel Beis, Perikhes, in Shmuel Beis. You familiar with what it says in Shmuel Beis, Perikhes? How many people died in the war? So it says three, and if they'll tell, they'll know, there are three numbers. There's 6,000, 12,000, 18,000. Okay, you can make a challenge. Either there are three different numbers, or it's a combination, whatever you want to say. Yeah, who are those 6, 12, 18? Are those the bad guys or the good guys? Are those the Indians or
the cowboys?
The cowboys. Who? Give me the number. I wouldn't blink. It's the bad guys, right? Until you read this Targum, and you begin to wonder. Someone here, I think, Michal, what do you say? Michal, no. It means at the hands of. It's the bad guys who were killed at the hands of. Okay. I'll accept. If that's the correct pshat, I accept. But is that really what it means? Min unefalu min chele hoin de David v'yoyav teresa alfin? We need to bring the Targum back to us. Mayor, you have a she'elus chaloim. We ask the Magid, it comes to you in your dreams and ask him to tell you the pshat in the Targum. It's both. There's no such thing in this world as a win and a loss. Everything in life is complicated.
No. Is that the size of that loss?
Was I a win or a loss? Well, ultimately, old what?
Loss.
Entebbe. Let's talk modern times, 20th century. Was Entebbe a win or a loss?
Why is it a loss?
Was Entebbe a win or a loss? What would you say?
It was a win.
It was a win?
Yeah, but
they were.
Okay, so they're all.
BB's brother, what was his name? What was?
Win is calculated by the PR effect, which is still existent today. I don't think you can mention
that. So
the guy who doesn't know what we're talking about.
No, was the mission accomplished? Yes.
There was a lot of tragedy that came out of Entebbe. Yes. Cannot deny. Yoni, the commander, was killed. That was a. There was a woman, an elderly woman, that was murdered. There was a soldier that was paralyzed for life. And there was other tragedies. There was a child that was killed by mistake. When they came into the airport, they told everyone, get down, Israeli army. And a child jumped up in excitement. It was a teenager, and he jumped up like, oh! And they out of reflex, they shot him. And he was killed. That's what I know, and I'm sure there's a lot more. And the trauma, by the way, no one can even judge the trauma. Was it an amazing Kiddush Hashem, a political, you know, political gain the whole world was talking about, and when people are living on a high from this, the people become frum from this, and they said, yeah, I have no doubt. Who's to judge? Who's to judge? No one's to judge. Only Hashem can judge. Every single thing in this world is complicated. There's no such thing as a win and a loss. Life is complicated. Was it necessary? Obviously, the people who were doing this felt this is what had to be done, whether you like it or not. No one's coming to second guess. You know who did it, by the way? Perez. The whole thing is on his plates. Shimon Perez. It was he was the Secretary of Defense. It was his decision. His plates that went and launched. It was his achrayas. No, it was Shimon's study. They have phenomenal. That I was totally years ago. I was obsessed with this. I saw everything you can see. I saw the movie.
Responsible for Israel getting the bomb from France.
Shimon Peres. I was obsessed with this, and they have on YouTube. They have this phenomenal documentaries. Different, completely different. Teams of people who did their own, and they're different. The angle of how they presented, I forgot everything by now. But it's complicated. It's not like you know, life is complicated. The Battle of Ai. At the end of the day, they won. Okay, they went, they counterattacked, they wiped out the whole Ai. They came into Israel. Who died in the process? Osniel ben Kenaz. Shokul Kineged Rubas Shel Sanhedrin. He went out to war. And he was the Gadol Hadar, and he died. So how do you, can you imagine the difference of Klal Yisrael when he was alive and when he's not alive? It's a different world. The Chazon Nish of Baruch, like I said, the world when there was a Chazon Nish, and there's a world when there's no Chazon Nish. It's a different world. It's literally a different world. You have Chaim Kanievsky a year ago was alive, and now he's not alive. It's a different world. It's different. It's Rav Moshe Feinstein. People remember Rav Moshe Feinstein? I asked someone recently. When Rav Moshe Feinstein, I can't speak for anyone. When Rav Moshe Feinstein was nifter, were you shocked? Did you feel that? I told over your story, that Rav Aaron Kotler, your Rebbe, he literally fainted. How many people do you know, Gedolim, when you heard they were nifter, your heart went out? It's interesting, like Rav Chaim Kanievsky, who's a good. For some reason, I don't know, I didn't faint. I guess a lot of people told me the same thing. They didn't faint. Why not? Why not? Why didn't you faint? When Rav Moshe Feinstein was nifted, did you like, oh, yeah, I did. I remember that moment. I remember that moment. Okay, there are certain people. Oh, Rav Moshe Feinstein was, how old was he? He was just as old.
He was almost 90.
Almost 90? Wasn't older than 90? Okay, but he was a zaken. He was very, very sick. But yet, when he was there, are other people, Gedolei Yisrael. Is it because we become dull? We're more used to it.
Who knows?
Who's to say? Who knows? No.
Is somebody who was your age?
Right. I don't see them being shocked. I don't see them. I tell you, that's what bothers me. The people that were my age when Rav Moshe Feinstein was nifter, and now they are sort of Chaim Kanievsky be nifter, I don't see them having that reaction that I had when Rav Moshe was nifter. I wasn't anything. I grew up in the Lower East Side, Rav Moshe Feinstein. You know, and when I heard he was, and I was a little kid when he was nifter, and I remember that, the shock. I remember where I was, the moment. I remember that shock. So I look at all these kids today. And they worship, they're taught. They're taught very well. They're taught very well, better than probably my generation. And then who's nifter? And do they have that same feeling? I don't think so. It doesn't seem to me they do. It doesn't seem, you know, there's a child, someone told me this story.
Well,
I was very
today is held in that esteem that Rav Moshe was held in also.
I don't know.
He
just
realized.
Put in my mind, if Rav Moshe was living at the same time, same generation as Rav Chaim, who would be the...
You can't judge. It's a different... It's not a fair question. It's a different generation. It's a different time. It's a different... Every... It's a whole... You can't compare. Mm-hmm. In any event, Osniel ben Kenaz, he was... So was the Battle of Ai worth it? He died. I mean, how do you judge? So you really can't judge. So again, this over here, you talk about a battle. You know, this battle cost us a lot. Shneim osa olef. Is that what it means? Maybe not. I don't know. This is just a ha'orah. All right, what time is it now? It's way too late. We have to stop over here. And tomorrow we're going to continue. We have to go to the next pasuk. Tomorrow we move ahead.
A U.S. tank goes 6/10 of a mile on a gallon.
But you know what?
A U.S. tank on a gallon of diesel, right? Diesel? Diesel 6/10 of a mile. And a car today can go probably almost 40 miles on gasoline. No, which is a lot cheaper. You can go 40 miles today. A good car can go 40, 45 miles. It's amazing, no? That's a lot of money.
I was no longer an insider.
Yeah, you're right.
No, but this is the truth. No, but I know people from all over that were saying that was the problem. Nobody.